Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. North of Colborne, on three huge pieces of old weathered plywood, are spray-painted messages. They read, "No mandatory vaccines. Not my new normal," and a third has a large letter Q. The Q stands for QAnon, a conspiracy theory once held by far-right extremists, but it's gaining mainstream acceptance in the United States and Canada, as well as around the world. Similarly, messages are being delivered across local social media groups. They are found in the chants of protesters and people across Northumberland. In fact, one recent interview posted on a local news website, a woman suggested Microsoft founder Bill Gates was calling local municipal leaders in an effort to curb democratic rights. It is a message straight out of the QAnon playbook. Part of the conspiracy messaging is aimed at spreading disinformation during the pandemic. On today's show, I'm pleased to welcome Marc-André Argentino, a Canadian expert on QAnon who has written extensively about the topic, as well as doing academic studies on disinformation and its use on social media to try and influence elections and public policy. Also on the show, I welcome back Dan Borwick, the county's Director of Economic Development, along with Brendan Canine, a retired business consultant. You might remember that they were leading the Economic Recovery Task Force to help county businesses get back on their feet during the pandemic. Well, they released their final report recently, and they're back on the show to share with us the results. But first, here is my conversation with Concordia University public scholar Marc-André Argentino about the infiltration of disinformation that is impacting the community. I am pleased to have with me today Marc-André Argentino, a public scholar with Concordia University. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you for having me today.
What is QAnon?
QAnon is a conspiracy theory, or started as one. It is based in a post that was found on an image board called 4chan in 2017 that claimed that Hillary Clinton would be arrested on October 30th in 2017. She obviously never was arrested, but from that one moment, the movement never really went away, and it really spiraled and grew. And its central belief is that there is a global satanic cabal of pedophilic global elites that are responsible for all the evil in the world, and that Donald Trump was elected to defeat this specific group of evil individuals, and that the deep state is also now responsible for trying to make sure that President Trump does not get elected in 2020. From that core tenet, QAnon is what we would call super conspiracy. So you could also include any conspiracy theory that would hold to that central tenet. So you have individuals who also believe in UFOs, who believe that the world is controlled by reptilian lizards, with the pandemic that the virus was released and controlled by Bill Gates. There's pretty much anything under the sun that holds to that central tenet of evil global elites controlling the world has kind of been folded into, and it creates this diverse and decentralized community of individuals, which what makes it quite attractive in our current world.
So here in Northumberland, there has been some indications that this has taken root in our community. For example, just north of Colborne, in a rural area, on the side of a barn, there is spray painted the letter Q, and then signs that say, "Not my new normal," and then "No mandatory vaccines." There's also been protests locally and with the same message. How prevalent is this QAnon phenomenon, and how is it spreading throughout Canada?
It's getting quite popular in Canada, and it has been for a while. It originally came into at least our population's interest around the time when the yellow vest movements were quite popular. That's how it really first brought into our ecosystems, our digital ecosystems anyways. The challenge with Canada versus the US conspiracy theory space is we're very much a hodgepodge of beliefs. So you may find QAnon believers dispersed across a wide range of ideological belief systems in Canada, whether it's those who believe in the UN global agenda to control the world. Some of them really believed in Trudeau conspiracy theories. Some of them are just, religious groups who believe in an apocalyptic end that is coming to the world. And they've kind of latched on to this belief. And it has become quite popular. We had in our last election at least one candidate who was campaigning on a QAnon platform. He had a YouTube channel that he was using as a way of decoding and debunking some conspiracy myths. His name was, I'm going to make sure I pronounce it properly, so I'm just double checking this. His name was Billy Joyce, and he was in Cape Breton. So we don't have the volume, let's say, that the U.S. has right now with 67 congressional candidates using QAnon as a platform. However, we did have at least one, and it looks like it's something that's growing now in 2020, especially with the pandemic.
So the kinds of things that we should be listening for if we're trying to identify sort of QAnon ideas that get mixed in with other types of protests, particularly the pandemic. Because I've heard in local interviews with local people mentioning that Bill Gates, for example, is phoning local municipalities to implement policies. Again, we're seeing signage and Facebook postings within local social media groups are communicating these ideas. What is it that we should be looking for, and how do these ideas start to weave together into a overarching message?
As I was saying in my definition of QAnon, the challenge with this movement is it is a decentralized movement that is under this wider umbrella conspiracy theory. So it could bring in almost any ideology or conspiracy ideology into it and absorb it because it's such a large movement now. The challenge is that conspiracy theories are there to provide an answer to the question of evil. It's always in this giant battle of good versus bad. In our pandemic right now, we're faced with a lot of difficult questions that we don't have answers to, and there's this invisible evil force that we're trying to combat. And we have, economic, political, and health insecurities that make individuals want to turn towards this challenge. So in March, it was 5G. That was the big one that you could have paid for and say, okay, 5G conspiracy theories were adjacent to QAnon, and QAnon movements were really amplifying it. However, there's some believers in these 5G conspiracies that caused the virus were not members of QAnon. This is like the challenge that we're facing. Right now, there are individuals such as that are promoting stuff that Bill Gates at Event 201, which was a tabletop exercise for a global pandemic, that was actually a planning mission, quote unquote, to prepare the global elite on what's going to happen when they release the coronavirus. We have other people who believe that wealthy individuals like George Soros are responsible for the virus. It's a very fluid and ever-changing perspective. And it was very interesting to study this early on, especially in the month of January, February, and March before the US went into lockdown and Canada followed suit, is QAnon was evolving their conspiracy theory as it went on, where they're talking about, promoting bleach as a way of curing the virus. That was one of the first stories about QAnon that kind of went viral. And then they were talking about how it's a plot by the deep state to prevent Trump from having his successful campaigns to get his reelection or to tank the economy so that, it's going to make it look like he failed as a leader. And it was going on to, oh no, when Trump started locking down the country, talk about taking measures. And it's like, oh no, now Trump and the white hats, which they call the people who are, working with President Trump to defeat the deep state, are in control of the virus and have turned it against the Chinese people and are going to use that against them as a bioweapon. And then when Don, as it was getting, the case were getting worse in the US, they're like, oh no, this is a Chinese bioweapon. They're using it against the US. So you see that the narrative always changes. It's very hard to pinpoint what it is. And now it's really close. If you're looking for this type of stuff now, it's really linked to the anti-mask protests and anti-mask movement. However, again, there are a lot of individuals who are not necessarily QAnon believers or maybe familiar with QAnon that are also holding into this, whether it's, you know, some individuals who believe that it's infringement on their freedom of their rights and their freedoms, or individuals who believe that this is a way of the government trying to control a population by forcing the mask. You have some individuals going even more racist conspiracy theories, going into the sense that this is the first step for the government to installing Sharia law across Canada by starting with something like a face mask. So there's a spectrum of stuff, and it's very difficult to say you're QAnon or not. And it's really looking at the protests or these type of events in your local town and trying to pick up cues, like, are they wearing just a giant Q logo on their shirts? Are they using, you know, their keyword is WWG1, WGA, or is where we go one, we go all, which is a line they took from the movie White Squall as a way of talking about the movement's unity and supporting each other. Other than that, it's very difficult to pinpoint them amongst the pool of other individuals that are also protesting and in this kind of day of crisis across Canada and the world, in all honesty.
Well, it's interesting too, because the way you talk about it, all these threads are sort of weaving together the anti-vaxxers, the anti-maskers, and then you have, again, a lot of talk about freedoms and rights. For example, locally, we have a protest around our beach closing. And there's discrepancies over, or arguments over, the ability to go and walk in the water versus walk on the beach, which is closed, and who has property rights and what is constitutional, and health unit officials are not elected, therefore they should not be allowed to dictate. All these kinds of things are talking about, and yet underneath it, there seems to be that infrastructure that you've been alluding to about larger conspiracies and governments taking over our rights and freedoms and that kind of thing. Help us to understand, is there a certain kind of person that is predisposed to sort of hearing these things and then weaving them all together in terms of their own views of the world?
It's hard to say if someone is predisposed. Human beings are, in a way, built to believe in conspiracy theories. It's one of the evolutionary coping mechanisms that we have. So it's hard to say if someone is predisposed to them or not. There's probably individuals who may more likely be, you know, vulnerable to these type of belief systems. It may be due to elements in their lives that are putting them in a situation of crisis that may want to find answers to these very difficult questions. Other individuals may just not have the proper tools to find the information that they have, or in some cases it might be due to, you know, the bias of the algorithms on their social media or their search engines based on what they have been consuming prior to ever coming in contact with conspiracy theories. It's a very difficult thing to talk about from that perspective. However, it's important to understand that conspiracy theories are a tool that people use to try to explain something that is going on. And it's really, you know, they basically, conspiracy theories try to develop a symbolic resource that'll enable people to address this problem of evil and something like the virus, or a perception that the government is overreaching or infringing on your rights. It's basically, you know, providing a type of alarm system for people to cope with what they may perceive as a threat. And this is where anyone who may be in this type of scenario, which at the moment, considering it's a global pandemic, is a lot of people, will probably turn towards these to try to find answers, especially when, you know, those that are experts or those that are in positions of power are changing their answers as their knowledge about the virus and the situation, you know, evolve. So you will see a lot of conspiracy theories referring to what the government or health experts were saying in February and March versus what they're saying now. Of course, the message has changed because our knowledge of the virus then versus now is very different. And it's all these like misinterpretations of the facts and finding, or misinterpretation or misunderstanding of how science works, provides this vacuum in their information, quote, what is it, in their capacity to understand what they're trying to perceive as the world, it fills into this space. We saw the same thing, for example, after 9/11. People were not understanding how such a massive structure could have been taken down by jet fuel and a plane alone. You're really having 9/11 truthers really nitpicking at how experts and the government were really trying to explain things away. It's not a new phenomenon. It's just this coping mechanism that people use to try to explain or find answers to difficult questions for which they're not satisfied with coming from the powers that be.
So that's interesting. So there's no particular demographic, no particular class, gender, education, background that limits or defines the people who are engaged in this?
Honestly, not much. We see individuals in position of power really leveraging QAnon right now, and that's something very different versus historical studies and research related to conspiracy theories. Joseph Uchinski from the University of Florida, in his research on conspiracy theories, regularly said that conspiracy theories were for losers or were the losing side, in the sense that someone who's losing is going to try to project their loss onto this large nebulous evil force or these nebulous reasons, whereas the winning side doesn't need to use this because they already have everything they wanted. So it's weird to see, you know, QAnon, which is rooted in this pro-Trump conspiracy theory, that in 2016 had won the House, had won the Senate, had won the election, so they had all the power, still turning towards conspiracy theory to explain things. It could have been because of the contentious, you know, events around the election of Donald Trump that may have provided this type of space. But now we see at least 67 congressional candidates running for election in the fall on a QAnon platform. I think now we're up to 15 of them or 16 of them that will be on the ballot in November, with another 19 candidates who have primaries coming up in the next month. So that number is probably going to go up. We have the president of the United States who's retweeted QAnon at least 185 times, and that count was from a few weeks ago, and I know he's done that a few times already. We're seeing celebrities, we're seeing, you know, new age health gurus on Instagram with hundreds of thousands of followers. I'm finding this, the One American News Network, Fox Network's journalists have been promoting or giving credence to. So we see these individuals in position of power promoting them. And then we see on videos of people posting a mixed bag of race and gender that are really in support of this movement. And it's quite inclusive to an extent, which, as long as you're touting their central narrative and their party lines, if you don't believe in QAnon, then you're going to be shunned. But anyone who really believes or wants to believe is quite welcome. And if you start believing or following or posting content about the movement, you're going to get followers and you're going to get feedback very fast, which is a very rewarding feeling for individuals that might be looking for that type of relationship. So it is bringing people in. If you spend a lot of time in QAnon, however, or if you go to where its origins are, especially on the image board called 8kun, where it's hosted now, you know, that's the board that was originally called 8chan and was shut down after it was hosting the live stream or was promoting the live stream of the mass shooting in New Zealand. You know, it's a host of Nazi and racist and misogynistic content. There's dubious type of pornography related to very young individuals. So if you go towards, the closer you go towards its core, you may find that it might not be as welcoming of specific genders or race or types of individuals, or it might have content that you're not very comfortable with. So it's very weird on the surface for those who may be just joining. However, if you spend enough time and you go deep down the rabbit hole, you may end up being disgusted by it to an extent, but also that may not be enough or hasn't been enough for a lot of people to turn away from it. So it's this really weird phenomena.
Well, it's interesting. In May, Carleton University released a study, and it was about conspiracy theories and incorrect scientific information about COVID-19 taking root in Canada. And it found that nearly half of Canadians, 46%, believe in at least one of four COVID-19 conspiracy theories and myths addressed in the survey. It also said that a quarter of Canadians, 26%, believe widely discredited conspiracy theories that the coronavirus caused COVID-19 was engineered as a bioweapon in a Chinese lab and was released into the general population. It then goes through and talks about some of the things that you've talked about 10% believing it was associated with the 5G network and some other theories. What does this study tell us about ourselves and about how we begin to understand or buy into these conspiracy theories?
I think the study really talks about the type of digital ecosystem that we're in and how, to an extent, our societies are not adapted to protect and support a population in a large-scale crisis, which is not necessarily something that's shocking, but I think it's important to highlight. We're in a period, like I was saying, where everything is kind of going wrong, right? Your businesses are closed, you can't go out, you're locked in your home, you're really stuck on the internet, and the answers that you have are not necessarily satisfactory, or you may be not listening to them. If we just think about behaviors of individuals, are we still listening to the, you know, the regular press that the prime minister is making, or the statement they're making about the virus still? Are we listening to our local, you know, premiers or our local, you know, municipal authorities about the virus still? Or are we just, you know, picking up once a week on the news? I remember early on, everyone was really paying close attention to what was being said and the information. That has kind of died down. And we are in a very toxic information space where you have, you know, conspiracy theorists, state actors. We have a bunch of sites that are using, you know, crises to spread clickbait or misinformation to sell products. And it creates this very weird environment where those who are looking to do harm are better equipped than those looking to prevent it, because it's easier to cause harm than to prevent it. So for people to get some type of misinformation, like that 54%, I think is realistic in having read this study when it came out. It makes sense because there's a lot of information going around to give a possible set of beliefs to one of the, like, to one type of conspiracy theory. Very likely. It gets more concerning to that core 10% of the population that believe in these wild conspiracy theories, and especially this type of stuff where you're talking about a bioweapon narrative, which has widely been debunked or disproven, whether not only by at least elected officials, but also from a scientific perspective. There's been at least two scientific studies I'm aware of that have talked about how the virus's genome was not created in the lab. It's natural. It doesn't have the markers of being man-made. But even with all this type of evidence, it doesn't rise enough to the surface to kind of disprove what people believe in. And there is a certain amount of confirmation bias where people are just going to want to believe in a specific narrative because they mistrust experts, they mistrust the government. It's kind of reflective of the world we live in. There was this great book I read called The Death of Expertise that talks about, you know, Google doctors and armchair researchers, and anyone who has a computer or a cell phone could go and look for their type of information, and they'll skip over the studies that doesn't represent the beliefs they have, and they'll latch onto the ones that provide the confirmation bias they're looking for. And it does have to do to an extent about a lack of tools and a lack of media literacy on a good segment of our population, or just a lack of, or just a laziness where individuals do not want to look at a diverse set of information and have a proper media diet to get an idea of what is out there. And it's not just liberal versus conservative media, but it's really the whole spectrum of it, because every type of media outlet is going to try to bias you in a specific way because it's their objective. They frame the news in a way that represents their brand.
What can we as individuals do going forward to help us better spot the kind of disinformation you've been talking about? And what can we as residents in Northumberland and across Canada, what can we do?
I think it is taking the time to read the news and the information that's provided to you. A lot of the studies have shown, at least in a digital context, most people will click on a title, maybe read a line or two, and then move on and kind of get emotional around a story. If the studies basically have been talking about how if you take the time to read a story, you're going to have maybe less of a different reaction than what the title is just going to say, and it might provide you a different perspective on what the facts are. So my advice would be twofold. And this is not the all-knowing, all-powerful. There's a lot of different approaches to this, and no one really agrees because we're not there yet. However, I would suggest two things. One, to have a diverse media diet where it doesn't matter where you fall on the political or ideological spectrum. Always read a story from both sides of your belief. If you're conservative, read a couple of liberal sources. If you're a liberal, read a couple of conservative sources. Be aware of what the other side is saying, because there may be grains of truth or maybe full truths in all sides, and you need to put multiple perspectives together to get a whole idea of what's going on. It's important to know that, and this falls into my second point, if something you read makes you very angry or very happy, to doubt it right away. If something is creating an emotional reaction in you, it's important to realize that that is the intention of the piece and it was framed and built that way. So take the time to read through it and try to find some information that will confirm or disprove what you have read and get that information, because news and facts should not make you emotional. They're supposed to be painted and portrayed in a neutral way to give you the information you need. And this is something that I think we should be a little more aware about when it comes from a media literacy perspective.
It's really interesting. I saw an article earlier this week on CBC about anti-masking groups using the same tactics as anti-vaxxers. And, you know, our ability to spot these theories and what can we do? I mean, at moments, it feels so overwhelming and so dispiriting to, you know, see these people putting these ideas out. And yet, when you do your homework and you read carefully, you see the disconnect. How do you, as an individual, balance all that so that you can see clearly and you don't become despondent?
I have an advantage, I guess, among other people, where as an academic by training, I've developed a set of methodologies to approach any topic. And it's these methodologies that I use to analyze and take apart information and then make my own personal decisions on them, which may come with its own set of biases, but it's basically this type of framing that protects me in a way from this. I consume so much disinformation, and I'll pose it, I consume so much information that disproves that disinformation, that it does take a type of approach where I have to rebuild all the facts and try to create a picture that I will accept and I'm comfortable with. This is also not an approach that may be useful to everyone, but I think it's a way that we may have to start considering, how can we apply this to a wider population? How do we provide tools to individuals that are stuck in this very diverse media ecosystem, and it's very difficult to get the facts? And this is one of the things I find that I'm doing often, especially within my friends and family, and I end up being this information guru where people ask me, is this true? Is this not? And I always try to take the time to find the evidence, show them how I found it, and explain it to them. And I think if you're in that position, at least within your own circle of friends, to do take the time to answer them and provide them with the information and how you came to it, and showing a little bit of that work. Other than that, it's a very difficult task to do. And it reflects how we have to take a longer term approach to this type of issues, whether it's, you know, disinformation coming from state actors, whether it's conspiracy theorists, whether it's extremist propaganda. Experts and governments and public health officials, we've been taking a very short term approach because we're dealing with a crisis. However, we need to consider long term, what type of solutions, what type of practices can we implement to protect the population and the next generation? How do we train them to be better citizens and better, you know, better informed citizens and better equipped to be immune to disinformation and conspiracy theories?
Marc-André Argentino, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much for having me on board. It was great to talk to you.
That was Marc-André Argentino, an expert on QAnon and disinformation campaigns, talking about the impact on Northumberland County. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.